And we're holding on page Ayin Vov in Rosh Hashanah, about seven lines from the beginning of Ois Chof Beis, Holach HaMetzai. We started learning yesterday about the story where Adam had come and testified that they saw the moon, and this happened to be where it's going to, where Rosh Hashanah is going to be declared as a result of that. And meanwhile, the next night, the moon wasn't visible, even though, of course, if it was visible the night before, it ought to have been visible the next night as well, and here it wasn't. So Dosa ben Hokinas argued that it means they must be false Adim. It's impossible to use his metaphor. You can't have the woman one day gives birth and the next day she's got a huge belly. She's well along into her pregnancy again. The same way it's impossible that the moon was reborn yesterday already and today it's disappeared as though like the pregnancy is far along. And Rabbi Yeshua said, I agree. And therefore that means that Adim must be false Adim. Meanwhile, Rabbi Gamliel was concerned. Meanwhile, Rabbi Gamliel had accepted the Adim as valid because his calculations had shown that, yes, the moon was visible the night after the 29th. They didn't see it the following night. Okay, maybe there was a cloud. Maybe there was something. Whatever. It's not our concern, the fact that it wasn't visible the next night. So now the result is that Rabbi Gamliel says Paskin that Rosh Hashanah is going to be on a certain day and Yom Kippur is going to be then 9 days later. And Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas hold that it's going to be 1 day later. Now, that's a problem because you're going to have different people are going to wind up celebrating Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and all the Yom Tovim on different dates. So Rabbi Gamliel had to take a very strong step to avoid that. So he tells Rabbi Yeshua that I want you to make a public display that the day that you think is Yom Kippur, which is 1 day after the day that I'm saying is Yom Kippur, you're to come over here with your walking stick and your money bag, thereby demonstrating that you actually show that you don't believe that day to be Yom Kippur, even though according to your calculations, it should be. And by the way, I mean, you know, later on, we find brachas later on when the Chachamim held that, the Chachamim realized, of course, that Gamliel was doing this for L'shem Shamayim, but on the other hand, the fact is the Chachamim did eventually hold it against Rabbi Gamliel. They understood he's acting L'shem Shamayim, but on the other hand, there came a point when they decided he's being a little too overbearing towards Rabbi Yeshua. We have the whole story in Brachas involving Tfilas Arvis Rishus, where that was the third time where Rabbi Gamliel acted in a bit of an overbearing way towards Rabbi Yeshua, and they pointed out over there, you have this story over here involving Rosh Hashanah. You have another story in Masechta Bechoras involving a case of a Bechor that developed a mum, where there's a question whether if a Kohen has a Bechor in his possession, are we choshed that a Kohen maybe may make a mum in a Bechor, because after all, as long as it doesn't have a mum, after the Bismikdash is destroyed, he can't do anything with it. Once there's a mum, he can shecht it and eat it. So he has a certain incentive to make a mum in it and have done with it. The question is, do we do the same thing with a Talmud Chacham? There was an argument between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua on that. And again, Rabbi Gamliel showed he made a public display of the fact that Rabbi Yeshua has to accept his authority. And then there was a third time, with Tfilas Arvis Rishus. And at that point, the Chacham said, enough already, we have to depose Rabbi Gamliel on the whole story that developed from there. But meanwhile, so this was the first of these three incidents. But the Sefer Dodos HaRishonim, by the way, makes a very interesting point in this regard. Up until recently before, how is it that all of a sudden, within a year, you had three incidents happen like that? Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, by that time, had been Nasi and Ab Beis Din for several years. He says an interesting idea. Until then, you had Rabbi Eliezer, who was in the picture as well. And Rabbi Eliezer was a third party who could help mediate. And if there's any friction between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, the Nasi and the Ab Beis Din, then Rabbi Eliezer could mediate things. But now, he says this happened after the whole story of Tanur Shalach Noi, when Rabbi Eliezer himself had his argument with the Chachamim, and they ended up Berchuhu, that they removed him from the company of the Chachamim and put him in a degree of Chayrim. So therefore, now that he's out of the picture, now when Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua have an argument, there's nobody of their caliber to mediate between them, and that's why these things started happening. And by the way, I mean, the fact that Rabbi Gamliel had to take such a strong step, we find, for example, about 900 years or so after these events, we have something similar that happened in Jewish history. In the times of Rabbi Sadia Gaon, there was a Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael by the name of Rabbi Aaron Ber Meir. He and his ancestors had been the hereditary Rosh Yeshiva, Gaonim, whatever you want to call them, in Eretz Yisrael for a couple hundred years by that point. They considered themselves to be the successors of the Nisim. And this Rabbi Aaron said that he had a Masorah from his ancestors about a difference in the calculations as far as, by that time, of course, they were using Meluah HaKavuah, but he said that he had a slightly different Masorah about what's the cutoff point for when Rosh Hashanah is pushed off a day or two and when it's not. And that one particular year that happened in that time, we're talking about 1100 years ago, it came out that according to him, Rosh Hashanah and Pesach the previous year would be 2 days earlier than according to the calculation that we have. And it became a huge machlokas. And Rav Sadia wrote an entire sefer. He wasn't the Goyim yet. He was a private person, but he wrote an entire sefer to disprove what Rav Aaron and Rav Meir was writing about it. And it became a whole argument in the event. Most people followed Rav Sadia, but the fact is there weren't people who got the news in time that particular year. There were some people who celebrated Pesach 2 days earlier than everybody else. So now you can see Rav Gamliel is trying to avoid such a thing from happening. The Gemara says, Holochu Motzer Rav Akiva Meitzer. So he went and found Rav Akiva trouble. Now the Gemara is going to ask, what does that mean? Does it mean that Rav Akiva went and found that Rav Yeshua is troubled, or the other way around, maybe that Rav Yeshua went and found Rav Akiva troubled? Anyway, Omar Lo, he says, Yeshli Lalamid, I can prove from a pasuk Shekol Masha Osa Rav Gamliel Osi, that everything Rav Gamliel did is validly done. Meaning, you want to argue Rav Yeshua that the Edim were false Edim, that may be, maybe they are false Edim, but once Rav Gamliel is Paskin, has accepted their Edus and been Makadish Lachodesh, then we can't second guess him. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Eila Moyad Hashem Mikro Kodesh Vagomer, pasuk says, these are the Moyadim of Hashem, the days that are called as days of holiness. And as the pasuk continues, Asher tikru'u oisam amoyadam, that you call them in their time, meaning however based and decide them, ben bismanon, or ben shalom bismanon, whether they're in the proper time or not, in the moyadis ela elu, there's no other moyadis but these. You can't second guess and start saying, but the Edom are false, therefore we have to push off Rosh Hashanah, and we have to push off Yom Kippur, nothing doing. Once they decided, that's how it is. Right, so we know that because that's the Gemara ends up explaining based on a Braisa, which spells it out more clearly. But the way the Mishnah phrases it, Holochu Motzer Rav Akiva Meitzer, could be taken, especially because the previous sentence, I think the Ritva points out, the previous sentence is talking about Rabbi Yeshua. So Omelo Rabbi Yeshua, Royani Estvarecha, and Rav Gamliel sent to him. So maybe the Holach is also referring to Rabbi Yeshua, and he went and found that Rav Akiva was troubled over the situation. But the Gemara ends up explaining, based on a Braisa, that no, it's the other way around. Rav Akiva went as a messenger to tell Rabbi Yeshua that he has to do this, and he found that he was troubled over this whole thing. Bolei Etzer Rav Doise Ben Hokinas. Then Rabbi Yeshua went to consult Rav Doise Ben Hokinas. He was the first one who had pointed out the problem over here, that the Edim must be false Edim. Omale, so Rav Doise said, it's true, I do hold they were false Edim. Nevertheless, in Boin Onu, you have another consideration. Besides what Rav Akiva told you about Ela Moya De Hashem, there's another consideration also. In Boin Onu, Lodun Achabes Dinesh Rav Gamliel. If we're going to go second guess and start rejudging things that Rav Gamliel's based in has decided, we're going to have to start second-guessing and re-evaluating everything that every single Beis Din from Moshe Rabbeinu's times until now did. And the fact is, Shenema, we find an apostate, we don't even know who all the members of Moshe's Beis Din are. By Yal Moshe of Aaron, it says by Matan Torah, Moshe and Aaron went up. See, not everybody went to the same place. Moshe went up all the way to the top of the mountain. Aaron, a lesser level. Nadav and Aviv, a lesser level, etc. But Nadav Aviv, v'shivim mizikni Yisrael. And 70 of the Skenim, this, by the way, connects with this week's parasha, because, you know, one of the reasons why it says why Nadav and Abihu passed away in this week's parasha goes back to them, where it says, Vayochol es vayechzol es elikim, Vayochol vayushtu. They ate and drank over there, and they had a certain talus rosh in front of the Shechina, and therefore now by the Chanukas HaMishkan, and they got theirs. But anyway. The point is, Rav Doise ben Hokinas says, Loma lo nisparshu shmois and shal skenim. Now, why does the Torah not list out the names of the 70 skenim? If they're important enough to be going up to Har Sinai, they ought to be important enough for the Torah to list out their names. In fact, Marshall points out also, these may be the 70, they were also Nevi'im. We find by the replacement 70 Skenim, after in Parashas Bahaloisa, when the original 70 Skenim had been burnt by the fire over there, and then Moshe says to Hashem, I can't take it anymore, the people are being too difficult for me, and Hashem tells him, Eskali Shiva Mishmizikni Israel. So they became Nevi'im, they became Nevi'im for the while, and therefore apparently Marsha is understanding the original 70 Skenim were Nevi'im too. So why doesn't it list out their names? Ella Lalandacha, it comes to teach you, Shakol Gimel Gimel, Shinisnanu, Shomdu, based in Israel, whenever you have even three Chachamim who are appointed as a based in over the Jewish people, and the minimum number of members of the based in that you need for Kiddush HaChodesh is three, Harehim to based in Ishom Moshe, then they're equivalent to Moshe's based in. In other words, because if you're going to start second guessing the based in of your time, you're going to say, well, Rabbi Gamliel is not of the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu. You're going to say, okay, maybe he's not. But is he of the caliber of one of those 70 Skenim? True, he may well be. We don't know who those 70 Skenim were. So therefore, Rabbi Dosa is telling him that you can't second guess him. So, Rabbi Yeshua, listen, not on Makler Ma'osa B'yodoy, he took his walking stick and his money in his hand, and we talked about yesterday what the Oruch HaNer says about why he told him to take that for both of them. This way, in case the halacha is, which the halacha is not in the end, but in case the halacha is that you're allowed to carry on Yom Kippur, then he's taking the money, which is mukta, and in case people are not going to notice the money because you don't carry it in the open, then he's taking his walking stick. Anyway, v'holach l'yavna etzer Rav Gamliel, and he went to Yavna to meet Rav Gamliel, v'yom shachal yavakapurim yisvachashvonei, on the day that he, Rav Yeshua, had considered should be Yom Kippur, which is one day after what Rav Gamliel had considered to be Yom Kippur. Omer Rav Gamliel on a shock al roshah. Rav Gamliel stood up and kissed Rav Yeshua on the head. Omalai, he says, boy v'shalem, Rebbe v'talmidi, come in peace, my Rebbe and my Talmud. You deserve to be called both. Rebbe v'chochma, you are my Rebbe and chochma, because you know a lot more Torah than I do. Rav Yeshua was also, it seems, a lot older than Rav Gamliel. V'talmidi shekiyamke es dvorai, and you're my Talmud in the sense that you're fulfilling what I told you to do and acting the way a Talmud should act to his Rebbe. But he was a Talmud. Well, he's a Talmud in the sense that the Nasi is considered to be the Rebbe of the whole Jewish people. So therefore, so of necessity, even the Av Beis Din is secondary to him, is considered a Talmud.
Yeah. The Nasi is greater than the Av Beis Din.
The Nasi outranks the Av Beis Din. Yeah. So the Gemara says Tanya. We learn in a Braisa. Now, so we had two stories in the Mishnah. This was all part of the second story. Then there was a first story where what happened was that the Edom came and said that they saw the old moon in the eastern sky on the morning of the 29th, and then they saw the new moon that same evening in the western sky, right after the sunset. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri said that's impossible. The moon is always invisible for a minimum of 24 hours between when it disappears and when it reappears. So how is it possible they saw it in the morning and then in the evening, yet Rav Gamliel accepted their Eidos, because again, Rav Gamliel calculated that it was possible for it to be visible the night after the 29th. They're saying they saw it in the morning of the 29th. Doesn't matter. That's not part of Eidos HaChodesh. It's irrelevant and we don't care. Maybe they saw a patch of cloud that they thought was the moon, whatever it is. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Omalem Rav Gamliel l'chachamim. Rav Gamliel explained to the Chachamim, Kach mukublani mibes avi abba. This is, I had the Kabbalah from my ancestors, the Nasi of the Nasiim. Rav Gamliel is already now the fifth generation from his family who is the Nasi. He had Hillel. Hillel had a son, Rav Shimon, who served briefly as Nasi. Then you had Rav Gamliel as Zakin. Then you had Rav Shimon Gamliel, who was killed or passed away at the time of the Churban. And now Rav Gamliel is the fifth one in that line. So I have by Kabbalah from my ancestors, and maybe even goes back even further, all the way back to David. Sometimes the moon travels in a longer path, sometimes in a shorter one. So some of the Rishonim explain that Rav Gamliel is using that to explain, you're telling me that it's impossible for the moon to ever be visible the morning of the 29th, and again that same evening that the new moon should be visible. No, sometimes it travels faster than you think. Sometimes it travels faster than average, and it is possible. And therefore, we don't even have to say that what they saw in the morning of the 29th was a cloud or something that may well have been the actual moon, and such a thing is possible. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that, no, the fact is it's impossible. Rather, what Rav Gamliel means, he's telling them a general fact. You should know the length of time from one molad to the next is not uniform. Like this one, we have our Lo HaKavua. We have a uniform amount, 29 days, 12 hours, 793 halakim, which Rav Gamliel himself mentions that figure in a few lines down in the Gemara. But in fact, the actual amount of time from one to the next is very variable. So in other words, if you may not know when the moon is going to be visible, but in fact it's possible to calculate, but it's a complicated calculation. The Rambam mentions at the end of, you know, the Rambam spends in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, he spends 3 chapters talking about the Luach Kavua. Then he spends 7 chapters talking about the calculation to calculate the visibility of the moon when you're actually calculating the way the Sanhedrin does. And he says, there's a Kalkalis Gdolus, there's very big confusions and uncertainties, but like irregularities in the moon's orbit. And it becomes very complicated to calculate. And you see how many additions and subtractions and so forth you have to do in order to get the right number. So yeah, Omer Rav Yechon, my time of debate, Rebbe. So Rav Yechon says, where does Rebbe's family, which is again the family of the Nassim, where do they get that from? This that the moon's motion is so irregular. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Osi Yereach LeMayadim, Hashem made the moon to tell us when the Yom Tovim are. Shemesh Yodam Avoyei, the sun knows when it comes down. Implying Shemeshu the Yodam Avoyei, the sun, which has a fairly uniform motion, knows when it's going to set. Yoreach lo yodem avoye, the moon, so to speak, does not, because its movement is so irregular that it's like it itself doesn't know the moment that it's going to set, unless you do all these elaborate calculations. So the Gemara gives some examples involving the visibility of the moon. Rav Chiya Chazi of Asira to have a koi b'tsafra de esim b'tisha. Rav Chiya one time saw the old moon was still visible on the morning of the 29th. And like we said, that's a problem because then it's not going to be visible that night. Shoko Kola, he took a clod of dirt, Pasek Bay, and threw it in the direction of the moon. Not that he's actually going to hit the moon, obviously, but he's doing that as like an expression of frustration. Like, what are you still doing over here? Omar, he says,
aren't the sun and the moon pre-programmed by Hashem?
Of course they're pre-programmed by Hashem, but the fact is, what we mean is, in other words, sun's motion is fairly easy to calculate. In Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, the Rambam gives, it's a fairly simple calculation. You take the average daily motion of the sun, you add to it a correction factor for the fact that the earth is not exactly in the middle of the, is not exactly in the center of the sun's orbit, and that's that. And it's fairly straightforward. When it comes to the moon, it's much more elaborate. You have many, many calculations that the Rambam explains. You have the moon itself that the Rambam describes moves along a small cycle that in turn moves around a larger cycle. So in effect, in other words, the moon's motion is almost like a corkscrew kind of, and you have all kinds of factors that you have to add and subtract and multiply and whatnot in order to get proper value. So that's what it means. Not that the moon doesn't know, but in other words, in the sense that Hashem's pre-programmed all of it, but nevertheless, it's a much more complicated calculation. So metaphorically, the pasuk can describe it that the moon doesn't even know when it's going to set unless you make all those calculations and then figure it out. Yeah. So again, Rav Chiya saw the moon was still visible the morning of the 29th. Chukar kola pasuk bay, he takes a clod of dirt and throws it at it. Omar, he says, La'uta ba'ina l'kadushi bach. Tonight, we need to be Makadashi. So Rashi explains, this was at the end of Elul, going into Rosh Hashanah. Now, the problem is like this. The Gemara mentions in the previous parak that the Chachamim would try to make a great effort to prevent Rosh Hashanah from coming out on certain days of the week. In the Luach HaKavua that we have nowadays, we do that. We have built in, or to the rules, are that the first day of Rosh Hashanah can't be Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday, because it'll cause problems as far as Yom Kippur and as far as Hashanah Rabbah. In those times, even though they were Makadosh al Piyariya, and therefore it was more variable, the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael would make an effort to avoid that. If they couldn't help it, then it would come out that way. So now Rav Chiya tells, speaking to the moon and saying like this, in order to make that work, in order to not have Rosh Hashanah come out on a day which is going to cause hardships to the Jews of Bavel, in particular, the Gemara mentions in the previous parak, you have two issues. If Yom Kippur comes out on Friday or on Sunday, you have the Gemara discusses problems mishum yarki or mishum mesaya, the Gemara says. Vegetables are going to spoil over 2 days. If you have Yom Tov next to Shabbos, no problem. You can cook on Yom Tov, but you can't cook on Shabbos, you can't cook on Yom Kippur. So vegetables in the climate of Bavel are going to spoil, and dead bodies, a person dies on one of those days, and again, they can't bury him on either one, the bodies may spoil. So for the sake of the Jews of Bavel, the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael would try to avoid having Yom Kippur come out on Friday or Sunday, which means they would try to avoid having Rosh Hashanah come out on Wednesday or on Friday. So now the Chiya says to the moon, we have a problem. If you're not going to be visible tonight, we're going to have no choice but to declare Elul 30 days long. That's going to push Rosh Hashanah a day later, and that's going to make that then Yom Kippur is going to be on one of those days that's going to cause problems for the Jews above it. So in fact, Rashi says, based on the sugya on Daf Chof, that there is a concept called Ma'aymin ala Eidim. The Gemara has a whole sugya over there about that sometimes Beis Din can coerce Edim into saying that they saw the moon, even though they didn't. Or Rabbeinu Hananel says, doesn't Rabbeinu Hananel explains, and the Rambam says similarly, doesn't actually mean they didn't see it at all. I mean, you're not going to make them outright lie in front of Beis Din. What's the point? It means, let's say, for example, they come to Beis Din first and say they saw the moon, and then they start second-guessing themselves. You know what? Actually, maybe it wasn't the moon. Maybe it was only a patch of cloud or something. Then Beis Din will coerce them and then threaten them and tell them, you know what? Stick to your guns. Stick to your original statement that it was actually the moon, so we can use that as a basis for being Mekadosh L'Chodesh. So now, Rav Priya says, if we're seeing you, the morning of the 29th, it's going to be impossible to do that, because everybody's going to know if it was visible the morning of the 29th, it can't possibly be visible that same night. So this whole Ma'ayman ala Edom is not going to work. But at Kaimas Hocha, so you're still standing over here in the sky, Zil Ikasi, go cover yourself, go disappear. And in fact, in the printed Gemara, on the side, there's a Girsa that says, yeah, Ba'ozal Ve'ikasi, and sure enough, the moon disappeared. Omalei Rebbe L'Rabchia. So now Rebbe says to Rabchia, Zil Ein Tav V'kad Shel Yarcha. Go to Ein Tav and declare Kiddush HaChodesh. Now, why does he have to do that? So Rashi says two possibilities. One is that it's a continuation of the previous story. Since the moon had been visible the morning of the 29th, now when they want to be ma'ayim on Edim to force them to say that in fact they saw the moon the night after the 29th, so they can declare Elul 29 days and have Rosh Hashanah on the day of the week that they want to have it on, I mean Kippur on the day they want to have it on. The problem is that there in town, wherever Rebbe was living at the time, Tzipori or Beis Shearim or wherever he was living, some people will have seen the moon, and they're going to start saying, oh, the Chacham are just doing whatever they want arbitrarily. The moon can't have possibly been visible that night, so therefore, how could they do that? Therefore, Rebbe tells Reb Chia, go to Ein Tav, which is a distance away from here, and be Mekadosh L'Chodesh over there, and that way it'll be a done deal. Then that way, people will say, okay, in Ein Tav, the moon was not visible on the morning of the 29th, and it was visible the night after. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is that there was a local gzera to prevent the Chachamim from being Mekadosh L'Chodesh. Therefore, Rebbe tells Reb Chia you have to go to Ein Tav to take care of the matter, because that's outside of this jurisdiction and will be safer to do it. Tosfos says, based on a Gemara Yerushalmi and on Midrashim, that there was a regular Beis Din set up for that purpose in Ein Tav. It wasn't just Yitali picking Ein Tav at random. That was the particular place where, in general, wherever possible, there would be Mekadosh L'Chodesh there. Because by this time, Rebbe and Reb Chia are living in the Galil, in the north of Eretz Yisrael. But ideally, Kiddush HaChodesh should be done in Eretz Yehuda, which is in the southern part of Eretz Yisrael. So Ein Tav is there in the south, and therefore, Rebbe is telling Reb Chia to go there. So according to that, this is not a continuation of the previous story, but rather in general, Rebbe one time tells Reb Chia to go to Ein Tav and be Mekadosh, Ushlachli Simona, David Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayim, and send me as a password to say that you've done it, the expression David Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayim, because David HaMelech is compared to the moon. We find that Malchus based David is compared to the moon. There's the famous thing that the moon has a cycle of 30 days, and similarly, Malchus based David, from Avraham to Shloimeh HaMelech, is 15 generations, and in Shloimeh's times, the moon was full, Chaim HaSiyah V'Ashlemusa, the Jewish people were at the greatest heights in their history, and it started getting less and less until the Malchus disappeared in the time of Tzidkiyahu, but nevertheless, the moon never completely disappears, it always is reborn, and the same way Malchus based David will be reborn, that's what we say in Kiddush Levana. It's a teres tiferes, it's a glorious thing, la musei vatin, for us Jewish people who are carried in the womb by Hashem, shehem asidim, the ischadish kamosa, that we will be renewed like the moon is renewed. We mentioned David HaMelech also in the paragraph at the end, in Omer Rabbi Shmuel. They also point out in Sfarim that the words David Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayim, are the same gematria as the words Rosh Chodesh. So that also makes a connection between them. Marsha refers over here to something that he explains in Masechta Sanhedrin in connection with the Gemara over there, that he explains that this that we're saying that Malchus based David is represented by the moon, and therefore it has to go through a period of disappearance, just like Malchus based David did. Now Rebbe, being the Nasi, is descended from David HaMelech. Actually, there are Gemaras in other places that say he was only descended from David HaMelech on the mother's side, but whatever, we're not going to get into that. But his Nasius is a continuation in a lesser way of the kingship of David HaMelech. So therefore, So he feels bad over this idea that the moon should have to disappear and then be reborn. And the Gemara mentions over there in the same way, the Nesios is eventually going to disappear from the Jewish people only to be reborn when Mashiach comes. So Rebbe doesn't want to be involved with that kind of thing because that's a siman that his own Nesios of his family is eventually going to disappear. Therefore, he delegates it to Reb Chiya and he tells him, send me a message, David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim, that we should realize the disappearance of the moon and the disappearance of the Nesios is not the end of things. There's going to be a rebirth after that. Okay, the Gemara tells Tana Rabbanan, Panachas Niskashu Shemayim Ba'ovim. One time the sky was cloudy. Veneris Dmus Levana Ve'esrim V'tisha L'Chodesh. They saw what looked like the moon on the 29th of the month. So we mean, in other words, on the night after the 29th. That would be the normal time to see it. But rather, we mean that it was on the night going into the 29th, which is too early to see it. There's even a girsa that Rishonim have that was seen on the night going into the 27th, which is for sure too early. People thought it must be Rosh Chodesh, a victory based in the Kaddish, and the Basin was thinking to be the Kaddish, the Chodesh. But Ram Gamliel says no. I have the Kabbalah from my ancestors, the Nesiim. The time from the renewal of the moon until the next one is not less than 29 days, 12 hours, of Shnei Shlishi Shah, and 2/3 of an hour, which is 40 minutes, the Ayin Gimel Chalokim, plus another 73 Chalokim, which is 4 minutes plus 1 Chalim. It doesn't mean it's actually never less than that. The fact is, based on the Rambam's calculation, it can be a few hours less. He means on average, that's the amount of what's used in our calendar nowadays, that we use the Loha Kavua, and therefore we say, in other words, it can't be too much either side of that. So here, you're seeing the moon a whole day earlier, a whole 3 days earlier, or whatever. That's not the moon. You're seeing a patch of clouds that looks like the moon. That day, the mother of Ben Zaza passed away. They spied Ram Gamliel Hesped Godel. And Ram Gamliel made a big Hesped for her. Not that she was really deserving that the Nasi himself should go and give a hesped for her, in order to publicize to everybody that Basin was not Makadish the Chodesh, because you can't do a spadim on Rosh Chodesh. So by doing a hesped, that made everybody aware that in fact they're mistaken, and that's not the moon and Basin, even though Basin themselves, except for Ram Gamliel, thought to be Makadish the Chodesh, they didn't in fact. The Mishnah had said, Holach Rabbi Akiva Mitzoy Meitzav Holach. We said Rabbi Akiva went and found him troubled. So we borrow the who? The question is, me Meitzav. Who are we saying, who is the Mishnah saying was troubled? Rabbi Akiva Meitzav or Rabbi Yeshua Meitzav? Does it mean that Rabbi Akiva was bothered by what's going on over here, that Rabbi Yeshua is going to be forced to violate what he thinks is Yom Kippur? Or does it mean that Rabbi Yeshua is the one who's bothered by it? Toshma, we can prove from a Braisa, the Tanya, the Braisa gives more detail. Rabbi Akiva went and found Rabbi Yeshua very troubled over the whole situation. What's wrong? Why are you so troubled? He answers him, Rabbi Akiva, or Rebbe is in parenthesis over here because Rabbi Akiva is Rabbi Yeshua's Talmud, he doesn't have to call him Rebbe. So Akiva, Roy Loishi Yipa Lamita Yudbeis Chodesh. It would be better that he, meaning myself, a person doesn't usually want to talk about himself negatively, so you talk in third person, so he, meaning I, would rather be sick in bed for 12 months, Val Yigzer Olav Zerazu, rather than be subjected to this Zera of having to violate what I consider as Yom Kippur. And Marsha points out, he's mentioning that kind of thing, because of course, if he's sick, then he won't be able to go to Ram Gamliel, so therefore he's saying, I'd rather that, if necessary. Omer Loi, Rabbi Akiva tells him, Rebbe, Tarsheni Loi Malafanecha Dover Echad Shulamantani, can you give me permission to say in front of you one thing that you have previously taught me? Omer, which will make you feel better. Omer Loi Emor, and Rabbi Shur tells him, go ahead, say, speak. Omer Loi, Rabbi Akiva tells him what it said in the Mishnah. Harehu Oima, Atem Gimel Oisam, really, it says in the Pasuk. Oisam, 3 times it says over there, the word oisam, asher tikru oisam, memoyadam, it says 3 times in the section about the Yom Tovim in Parshas Emor. And each time it says choser, each time it's written choser without the vav, so we can read the word as if it said atem, you. Why 3 times? I mean, atem afilu shoyudim, means that you, whatever you based in declare, is valid even if they made a mistake. For example, Rashi says they thought that the month is supposed to be 30 days long and they made a mistake. or even if they do it deliberately, like we said before, where they want to manipulate the dates in order to make Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and other Yom Tovim fall on certain days of the week, and even if you've been misled, for example, by Eidei Sheker, like in this case, no matter what, the Pasuk is saying that whatever Beis Din decides is how it is, and there's no changing. So therefore, so you shouldn't feel bad that you're being told to violate Yom Kippur, because it's not in fact Yom Kippur. You may hold their Eidei Sheker, and maybe they are Eidei Sheker, but it doesn't matter because Atam Afilu Mutin. And there are some Rishonim who have the Gears to Atam Afilu Anusim, whatever. The point is, in other words, that no matter what the basis was, why they did it, nevertheless it's valid. The Loshin Azer Omaloi, Rabbi Yeshua answered him with these exact words, Akiva, Nichamtani, Akiva, you've comforted me. In other words, now I feel better, and I don't mind going and doing this. Why is he saying the double expression, Nichamtani? Marshall says, he's saying, first of all, you're making me feel better that it's true, Atam Afilu Mezidim, so even if I'm going and violating what I think is Yom Kippur, in fact, I won't be violating anything because it's not in fact Yom Kippur. And also, Nichamtani, that Rambam Gamliel himself, even if he made a mistake, he was misled by what I consider to be false Edim, nevertheless, it's not that Hashem actually said that he's actually doing anything wrong because based on the Atam that you said. So therefore, it's a double Nechama about what I'm doing and about what Rambam Gamliel is doing. The Aruch HaNer points out another nuance in it also. I feel better over the fact that I'm being told to violate Yom Kippur. I also feel better over the fact. So like this now, based on all of this, I mean, what day am I going to be keeping Yom Kippur and fasting? The day before, I think, is Yom Kippur. Well, wouldn't that be an issue of Bal Tosif? Wouldn't that be an issue that I'm adding to the mitzvah? No, Nichamtani, you've made me feel better on that as well. There's no Bal Tosif over here because that day is, in fact, the valid Yom Kippur. Okay, so then we said that Rabbi Yeshua went to Rabbi Dosa ben Harkinas to consult with him, and Rabbi Dosa pointed out this thing about the 70 skein of Moshe's time. So the Gemara says, Tanur Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, more details about that drasha. The Pasuk says, V'shivim ish mizikne Yisrael, that Moshe went out to have Sinai accompanied by 70 skeinim. So again, why are the names of these skeinim not listed in the Pasuk? The reason is, so you don't have, a person doesn't say to somebody else, Ploini to Moshe of Aaron. You think that Ploini, the Dayan of my times, is like Moshe of Aaron, Ploini to Elder to Medad, Ploini to Nodav Baviu. So, okay, he may not be like Moshe of Aaron, he may not be like Elder to Medad, etc. But he could be like one of those anonymous 70s Canaan whose names and we have no idea. V'Omer, and we have another postic that expresses the same point. Now, Maharsha points out, of course, it's true, the Beis Din of your time are not necessarily of the caliber of them. The fact is, the ones that we're mentioning were Nevi'im. But we're saying, as far as the fact that the names of them are not mentioned, yes, we do know all of them were Nevi'im, but the fact that their names weren't mentioned is to tell you that you should realize that the Beis Din of your time is considered as important as them. But Omer, and you have another pasuk that expresses the same idea. After when Shaul is being crowned as king, so we have in the Pesukim over there, first Shaul was crowned and not everybody accepted him as king, then there was a war against Nachash Melech ben Ammon, and then everybody is willing to accept Shaul as king, so Shmuel tells everybody, L'chuv v'nelchah Gilgal, Tzav Torah, Parshas Korach, let's go to Gilgal and we're gonna start all over again, from square one with the beginning of Shaul's Malchus, and then Shmuel gives a speech to the Jewish people over there, and he starts out by Yom Shmuel, and it's like his valedictory speech. It's like the main part of his career is now over. He's still going to be advising Shaul and telling him what to do and what not to do, but now basically he's handing over the rulership to Shaul, so therefore he gives like a speech summarizing what happened until now. By Yom Shmuel Alam, Hashem Asher Oser Es Moshe Ves Aaron Begamer. Hashem is the one who made Moshe and Aaron and made them available to take you out of Mitzrayim. But Omer, and then he describes what Hashem did for the Jewish people, and he describes by Yishlach Hashem as Yerubal Ves Vidon Ves Yiftoch Ves Shmuel. Throughout all the time of the Shoftim, Hashem always made sure that there was a Shofet to help save you whenever you're in trouble with the Goyim surrounding you. So Hashem sent Yerubal and Bidon and Yiftach and Shmuel. Shmuel being himself. Sometimes we find in the Pesukim that a person speaks on about himself in third person. So first, let's understand who all these people are. Yerubal is a Gidon. The name Yerubal is another name for Gidon. He's called Yerubal because he fought against the Baal. You have the Psukim and Shoftim describe how after Hashem chose him as the next Shofet, so he gets a form of Nevuah that night. He wasn't really a Navi, but he gets like a vision from Hashem that tells him his father Yoyosh was an Oved Avodah Zarah. He had a Mizbeach for the Baal over there. He had an Asherah tree in honor of another Getchke. He had a bull over there that had been fattened up for years as Korban for Avodah Zarah. And Hashem tells him to go and break down that Mizbeach and then chop down the Asherah and then build a new Mizbeach over there and use the wood from the Asherah and use the ox to bring as a Korban to Hashem. And he does, and everybody finds out about it the next morning, and they're furious. And the Psukim say over there that he was called Yerubal in token of that. Now Marshall explains, when the people called him Yerubal, they meant that as a derogatory thing. As the Pasuk says over there, Yerubal. They said Baal should fight against him, ki nosat es mizbechoi, because he tore down his mizbeach. But now Shmuel is using that name for him in a complimentary sense. He fought the Baal, and he won. Because in the end, in the Psukim over there, when the people are angry at Gideon, they tell Yoyash, we need to kill him, and what a chutzpah that he should do that, and then Yoyash tells them, relax, if the Baal is really that powerful, he can stand up for himself. And of course, he never did, so now Shmuel is using the name Yerubal in a complimentary sense that in the end, he fought against the Baal, and the Baal did not fight against him, as the people were saying. Next, B'don Zeh Shimshon. Next, B'don is another name for Shimshon. Why is he called by that name? Because he came from Shevet Don. Yiftach to Mashmo. Yiftach means exactly who it sounds like, the Shofet Yiftach. But Omer, now, so we see that Shmuel is mentioning three of the Shoftim, but Omer, now, then he mentions, together with those three Shoftim, he mentions himself. Now let's consider what the difference is in caliber between them. But Omer, you have a pasuk in Tillim, Moshe v'Aaron b'Choyanav, Moshe and Aaron among Hashem's Koyanim, or Shmuel b'Kolei Shmoi, and Shmuel among those who call on Hashem's name, meaning Shokal HaKol. So therefore, in other words, Shmuel, in a certain sense, is the equal of Moshe and Aaron, in the sense, as the pasuk is saying, that all of them have this in common, that they all called to Hashem, Kodim al Hashem, b'Hu Yanim, they all called out to Hashem, and Hashem answered them on the spot. So he's comparing Gideon and Shimshon and Yiftach to himself, to Shmuel. So Shokal HaKosav Gimel, and before that, a few pesukim earlier, he mentions Moshe and Aaron. Shokal HaKosav Gimel Kalei Olam ki Gimel Chamurei Olam. So therefore, in other words, he's putting the three lighter ones of the world, Gideon and Shimshon and Yiftach, are nowhere near as great as Moshe and Aaron and Shmuel, but it's still putting them on an equal level with them. Loy Maloch, that tells you, Yerubal Bedurde to Moshe Bedurde, Yerubal Gideon in his times is the equivalent of Moshe in his times, Bedon Bedurde to Aaron Bedurde, Bedon Shimshon is in his times equivalent to Aaron in his times, Yiftach Bedurde to Shmuel Bedurde, and Yiftach is like Shmuel in his. The Rambam first will point out that there's actually a similarity between each pair. Gideon had actual open nisim happen through him, as Moshe did. Shimshon, the big misoyan that he went through many times was things involving Arias with Benois pushed him, and Aaron we find is especially nizher about that. You have all the mitzvahs of Kohenim about who they're allowed to marry and who they're not allowed to, and Yiftach is like Shmuel in the sense that that both of them. I don't remember actually what the comparison is between them. Marsha actually points out they're out of order anyway, because Shimshon lived after Yiftach. So he says, because the point is, Shimshon is being called Bedon after his Shevet, because when Yaakov gave the bracha to Shevet Don, he said, Don Yodin Ame, Ta'achad Shivti Yisrael, he's going to be like a snake, etc. He was foretelling what's going to happen with Shimshon. So therefore, as opposed to Yiftach, is from Shevet Menashe, we don't find anything explicit in any Nevuah in the Torah about his accomplishments. Therefore, Bedon, Shimshon, goes first ahead of Yiftach. Abba Benel, actually, in Psukim, gives a different explanation. He says, because by Shimshon, you find more open nisim, by Yiftach, you don't find any open nisim. So therefore, he goes last. By Gideon and by Shimshon, you find nisim, by Yiftach, not so much. Anyway, so the Lamdecho, this teaches you, continues Reb Yosef ben Hyrkanus, Shafilu Kal Shebakalim, that even when you have the least important of the least, when Ismana Parnas Alatzibur, and he was appointed as a leader over the community, Harehu Abel Shebabirim, then he's like the mightiest of the mighty, and you have to have the same degree of Derech Eretz for him. But Omer, and you also have another pasuk that expresses that point. The pasuk says, "Vaser alakoyinim alavim." You should come when you have a question in halacha that you can't resolve. You come to the koyinim alavim, who are by the besmikdash, meaning the members of the Sanhedrin. Ve'al shofet ashiyah v'yom mehem, and you come to the shofet who's in those times. So what do you mean that in those times? Do you think you could go to a shofet who's not in your time? What did the pasuk have to mention that point? Means you can only go, the pasuk is telling you, only look for the shofet of your times. Don't be saying, but he's not of the caliber of the earlier shofetim. But Omer, you have another pasuk expresses that idea. Al toma mehoya, don't say what was, in other words, what's going on, that our leaders are not of the caliber of the earlier ones. Shayomim harishonim harishonim me'ela, the old times were the good times, then we had real leaders. No, as Rashi says, as the pasuk continues, you're not asking out of chokmah. The fact is, the earlier generations were greater and better than the later ones. Therefore, they had better leaders, because the Gemara mentions elsewhere, the caliber of the leaders goes according to the caliber of the dur. So if you were a greater dur, you would have greater leaders, but you're not. But the point is, you can't second guess your leaders and say, but they're not of the caliber of the earlier ones. Why do we need so many psukim? So the Rish talks about it, and then the Ritzvah talks about it. The Ritzvah explains, because the first ones you have about Shoftim and Malachim, that you see the ones of later generations, are considered equal to the earlier ones. Then we need another one to tell us about the Beis Din. And we need another one to tell us about different kinds of leaders, that no matter what the position, you still have the same concept. So, because that's who's available in that time. All that's available is Kal Shabakalim. With that said, I mean, we don't mean when he's being appointed, for example, because of money or whatever. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that a dayan who's appointed because of money, then you're not allowed to have any derech eretz for him at all. Marshal, for example, talks about in Sanhedrin, he has a whole rant over there about the rabbanim of his times, when many of them used to buy their positions, but we're talking about over here where they're appointed for valid reasons. They're just not of the caliber of the earlier generations. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula, Chapei of the Beis, the Rebbetzin's birthday. So talking about the Noshim Tzidkonius. When it comes to the Ge'ula HaSidah, he made says Chama Eretz Mitzrayim, it'll be like the time when we left Mitzrayim, Aron and Eflois, meaning that it's going to be in the Schar of the Noshim Tzidkonius of the generation of Mashiach, as we have. In fact, the Chazal say that explicitly. The generations will be redeemed from Golus only in the schar of the Noshim Tzidkonius in the generation. And we know, the Arizal explained that the generation of the Gola Hasida is a Gilgul of the generation that left Mitzrayim. Therefore, the Noshim Tzidkonius of our generation, in whose schus we will be taken out of Golus, they are the Noshim Tzidkonius who went out of Mitzrayim. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos, so we talked about yesterday that you're not allowed to, for example, cross through a stream or a canal of water because your clothes are going to get wet and then you might squeeze them out. You're not even allowed to walk in an area that's slippery for the same reason. But if you're going for a dvar mitzvah, for example, you're going to greet your father or your rebbe or somebody else who's greater than chachma, then you are allowed to cross a river as long as the Alter Rebbe adds if you don't have another way. If you have another way, even if it's a detour, you should do that. But still, you could do that. However, you have to make a shinui. What you do is you keep your hand under the hem of your garment the whole time. That way you'll remember that it's different, that it's Shabbos, and you won't come to squeeze it. You also have, though, there's certain kinds of footwear you can't wear because they might slip off in the water and then you may carry them. Once you went for a dvar mitzvah, then you would be allowed to return. On the other hand, if you went for something which is considered like a ksas mitzvah, like, for example, it gives the example to watch your peiros to prevent animals or ganovim or whatever from getting them, then you're not allowed to return crossing the water only when you went for a full-fledged dvar mitzvah.